A little idle chatter about the people that we know. And though it doesn't matter, is there a different way of saying hello?
You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe to this podcast, visit www.questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes Store.
It's all about connections, tell you anywhere you go.
Hey, I'm Meg Riley, so excited to be back with another episode of The View. I am here at the UUA headquarters today in Boston, Massachusetts, which is also the Church of the Larger Fellowship headquarters. I'm in a phone booth. That's this odd little room I'm in. How about you, Joanna? Where are you today?
I am here in my study at the church in Austin, Texas.
And Aisha?
Hi, I'm Aisha Hauser, and I'm in my den in Seattle, Washington.
That's great. Kind of faded out, you can sort of dimly see his face. Slim Moon has taken over technology this year. Bob LaValle has moved on, and we miss him and appreciate everything that he did for us. And we're grateful that Slim, you want to say hey to people? Tell them where you are.
Hi, everybody. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad everybody's here.
He's in Vancouver, Washington. And we're really excited today to have as our special guest Artemis Jakowski, who has done many things in his life, but most recently has worked with Ken Burns to create the movie Defying the Nazis, The Sharps War, about his grandparents, Martha and Wadesil Sharp. So we're really excited, Artemis, to have you with us and to tell us. I mean, it's been at the White House, it's been at the Holocaust Museum, it's been at the UN. Tell us about what's going on with this movie, and we're going to have lots of questions for you, as I'm sure the folks viewing will as well. But tell us, we'll just start with this. How did you start making a movie?
Well, it all started when I was in the ninth grade, and I was given an assignment by my ninth grade history teacher to interview someone of moral courage. And I came home, and I said to my mom, who should I speak to? And she said, well, call your grandmother. She did some cool things during World War II. And little did I know, I would find out my grandmother was basically outwitting the Nazis, saving lives, falsifying documents, really acting as a spy on behalf of social democrats, Unitarians, Jews, and others who would
be
persecuted.
So no one had ever mentioned this to you about your grandmother?
No one had ever mentioned it, and my grandmother really wasn't wanting to talk about it. I think part of it was that World War II generation didn't want to celebrate their achievements when they had lost so much. Mm-hmm. My grandparents felt, I think, very sad that they could not help more people. And I think they really didn't want to speak about it because it brought up such bad memories. It was a member of my grandfather's church many years later in Davenport, Iowa, who came up to me and said, you know, I was in Wadesil's church for 15 years, and he never mentioned his work in Europe once. And so that kind of gives you an idea of what we've been doing in reconstructing this story since that time, finding their archives, finding the people they rescued, interviewing them, many of them before they passed away. Unfortunately, given the age of many of these people, we've lost about half the interviewees. But together with a group of amazing filmmakers that includes Ken Burns as my co-director, we have put together an emotional film, a personal film, but that also sets in the context of World War II and the larger historical troubles of that period, and explains in many ways what the Sharps did and why they did what they did. Although, you know, I just showed the film last night to a wonderful group of Unitarians, and the conversations and the questions and kind of why did this happen and why did that happen. Like anything in history, once you share a story, people want to know more, you know, and that's what's really exciting about this story is that we've shared the story in such a personal way that I think viewers want to understand more of the personal part. It is a love story. The film is a love story. It's a story of intrigue. It's an Alan First type novel where you're, you know, you're kind of under the nose of the Gestapo. But it's ultimately a love story, not just between Martha and Wastel, but Martha and Wastel and how they felt about the world and how they loved all of humanity and how their actions were very much about not just loving their community or their family or their home turf. They were looking at what was going on in Europe and really wanting to challenge the fascist tendencies that were creeping up in Europe at that time.
So you've been at work on this for years. I know that you really didn't just waltz in and say, hey, Ken, how about we do this? And there it went. I mean, tell us how you did such a huge thing, this huge memorial that you've done.
Well, the first thing, that assignment in ninth grade, first of all, was the only A I ever got in high school. So it was a very proud moment for me. I'd never done well academically, but something touched my heart about my grandmother, and I wanted to know more about her and what motivated her. And so that conversation went on for about 20 years. And I always imagined a film or a book, and literally before they passed, I promised each of them that I would publish their own stories for the world to see. So I feel very much that in publishing our book with Beacon Press, I'm kind of completing that promise that I made to them. But the thing that's so exciting to me is how many people have identified with this story as their own. You know, almost all the people we're working with, both at PBS or in the media, are, you know, always introduce themselves as saying, you know, my family was also affected by World War II, or my family was, you know, in the Holocaust, or, you know, so this is a story that's not just about Martha and Wastel. This is a story that inspires a whole generation of people to understand both what happened during that period, but more importantly, what is the implications today? Like, how this film is inspiring people today to talk about refugees, to talk about the whole notion of the other, you know, what is the other? And really, for me, it's a ministry of sharing a sense of that we are a humanist community, that our society will only benefit when we understand the underlying humanism of each of us, and that tolerance is like the first step, or stopping hate is the first step. But really what the Sharps show us is that when you reach across to others, when you come to their aid, when they've asked for your aid, you know, it's amazing what can happen in those circumstances. And even though the Sharps did not rescue as many people as they hoped, they literally helped hundreds of people escape, which is simply amazing to me as a grandson. And I think it challenges me to say, what can I do? You know, as a Unitarian Universalist, what can I do? I can't be Martha and Wastel Sharp. Not many people can leave their children, go to a foreign place, save other children.
Why don't you, Artemis, why don't you share exactly what they did, when they left, story. How they did that. Yeah, just share a little bit of their story so that people who aren't familiar with them know it.
Absolutely. Well, the Unitarian Church in Boston was outraged by what was happening in Prague. Their sister church, Unitaria, said, don't send us money, send us Americans. We need Americans to come here and help us because the Nazis are infiltrating our communities, and the only thing that the Nazis are afraid of are Americans. And so the Unitarian leadership, very much wanting to create a service entity like the American Friends Service Committee of the Quakers, invited a husband and a wife, a minister and his wife, to leave their parish and go to Europe and help their sister church in Prague. And of course, most ministers felt afraid of the war coming or losing their jobs or the impact in other areas of their lives. So they said no. And ironically and so magically, you know, they were the 18th choice. You know, and the number 18 in Judaism is the most important numbers. It means high or life. So that's also an incredible irony. Anyway, they accept the invitation. The Unitarian community in Wellesley Hills and in Boston move into their home, take care of my mother, who was two, and my uncle. And this is a very special story of the family called the Stebbinses. And they're very important members of the Unitarian community in this period of time. He was the publisher of Beacon Press at the time, Livingston Stebbins. And so anyway, they take care of my mother and uncle. My mother and uncle go to England first. And they meet with the Unitarians and Quakers in England and learn that they're going to have to know spycraft, that the Nazis will be spying on them. And I think my grandmother realizes, oh, my God, this is really, like, more dangerous than we thought. They arrive on Prague into Wilson Station in February 26 and realize that the entire country is in chaos and that people on the trains are literally waiting to get out as they are coming in. And I think on their train there were maybe 20 people, 30 people, but the trains leaving Prague were just, you know, packed with Social Democrats, largely men who were trying to escape with women and children on the platforms crying, you know, saying goodbye. And Wejsta looks at Norbert Chopek, this amazing Czech minister, and says, you know, I've arrived to a nation in crisis, and, you know, we've got to get to work. So right away the Sharps start helping in ways that they can. They've really been given a mandate to help with refugees. But when the Nazis invade March 15th, the Ides of March 1939, everything changes. And they decide, after lots of discussion with the ambassador, with the underground, that they will stay, and they will now change their work from refugee support to rescue. And they start getting people out as much as they can. And they do that by laundering money, they take people over mountains, they buy people's plane tickets, they do whatever they can. There's no single method. But one thing you do learn, in spite of having to evade the Gestapo, so you have to physically be moving around, is you also had to go through a tremendous amount of bureaucracy to get someone out. You know, rescue is a bureaucratic process, really. And so one of the most beautiful things that happened when I started this film was I discovered all my grandmother's original documents of who she had rescued. So that became the basis in which we did our research. We found, you know, these people that my grandparents basically rescued. So they were there from February until August, helping as much as they could, money laundering, taking people out, and then there was an arrest warrant for them. And being a good mom and dad, they realized, we got to get home. This is serious. We might get killed. And they left. And they get on to the Queen Mary and sail home. And on that sail home, England declares war against Germany, and World War II officially begins. This is September 3rd, 1939. And by the time they get home, almost 2 weeks later, you know, they are just amazed that most Americans are more concerned about who's going to win the World Series than why this war has just been declared. And what you really get a sense in this story is the isolationism that has carried from the Depression is still very much an American phenomena. And FDR literally couldn't do anything to engage American public. And it wasn't until Pearl Harbor, of course, that the United States decided we have to fight these people. My grandparents were passionate pacifists, but at the same time they wanted to engage Hitler. They felt that the evil of Hitler could not be negotiated through agreements, and that he really needed to be stopped militarily. And on the second trip to Prague, to southern France, my grandfather actually declares war on Germany from the pulpit. Imagine in the Unitarian community, you know, a Unitarian minister declaring war on anybody. even using the word war. But here he is in 1940 declaring war on Germany. And his Unitarian brothers and sisters are not that happy about it. They're not happy that Martha's leaving her children.